to trade all the day from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning, and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
America is at war, but it's not being fought with guns or missiles. Now they want to control your beliefs. Everywhere you look, it's false narratives and fake news. Information control is power, and you are their target. And if they don't fool you, they fool your neighbors and your family. You want to stand up for truth, justice, and the American way? To win, you need good intel. We bring it to you. Reliable sources, relevant information, and honest analysis. Coming to you live from Intel Warriors.
Should be there now, Thomas.
Well, I'm not so sure that we're on the server.
Looks like we are.
Hey, hey, Revolution Radio listeners. I guess we are on. It was a little confusing there for a moment. All right. Well, hey.
John should be there. Are you there,
John? Are you there,
John? I am here.
Awesome. Okay, let me do the show intro, and then we can talk. All right.
Okay.
Holy smokes. Hey, Revolution Radio listeners. This is Wednesday, July 6th, 2022, and you are on Studio B listening to Intel Warriors, you know, where the smart kids hang out. Hey, Revolution Radio is a free speech zone. Check out the website at revolution.radio. Type that in your browser's URL bar, and you'll go to the website. And on Studio A and Studio B, you'll see there's a schedule for a whole lot of really cool shows. This is a free speech zone, so people can say what's on their mind here. And we don't have leftist fact checkers or political people or corporations telling us what we can or cannot say. So, you know, we can really dig into things. So, also, while you're there, check out the Nice Bright Become a Patron button. It's your way to contribute to free speech, to keep the servers alive. All contributions help, because this is volunteer stuff. We do not get paid to do this. Your contributions fund the server connections and data bandwidth and other things that go with this kind of a service. Our show is Intel Warriors, and our website is intelwarriors.com. If you go to the website, you'll see a blog posted by Dagny with all sorts of fun links that you can use to annoy your friends on Facebook and Twitter, and also your not-so-much friends. Yeah, a lot of great stuff there, a lot of good information. We cover topics from the war in Ukraine to science. Hey, today I'm going to mention briefly, before we jump into John's thing. By the way, your host for today, your host for today are myself. Sorry, Thomas Sayer, and we also have Dagny Soul. How's your audio, Dagny?
I think it's fine. Sound good to you?
Yep, all loud and clear. And we also have John Chambers, Mr. Constitution. And if you wonder why he's on the show today, you haven't been paying attention to the news for the last 2 weeks, okay? There's a reason he's on the show today. We're going to talk about the Constitution a bit. And John is a prolific author as well. I want to throw something in, just a little bit of a news report that had me chuckling. I saw a little earlier today, the Georgia Guidestones. Y'all know what that is, right? This mysterious thing that was erected to talk about the future of humanity, right? The future of humanity. This was erected in 1980 by a mysterious person named R.C. Christian, and I'm told that stands for Rosicrucian. But the Georgia Guidestones say something really bizarre, and this is stone monuments. This is Stonehenge-type monuments in Georgia. And what's written is the goals for whomever is going to – well, whoever posted this, as well as perhaps the New World Order, or there's a lot of conspiracy theories going on about this, but they say things like, we're going to maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. We're going to guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. That's eugenics, right? We're going to unite humanity with a living new language, as in we're going to feed you the words and you will say our words, right? We're going to rule passion, faith, and tradition and all things with tempered reason, as in we smart people are going to take over all your institutions and traditions, right? We're going to protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Huh, whose notion of justice will they be serving? I'm sure we'll be talking with John about that shortly. We're going to let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. I don't believe you.
In other words, one world government.
Right, one world government. And yeah, we'll let you handle your own internal affairs. If you look at the progress of what we call the New World Order, I do not believe this claim, as because they have been toppling one nation after another and putting in puppet leaders who then rule that nation internally, but they serve the globalists. We're going to avoid petty laws and useless officials. Well, that might be your local lawmaking capability, and anyone that the New World Order guys say, oh, you're useless, we're going to tell you what to do. You don't need that person, like your county commissioners. You don't need that anymore. You answer to the central government, right? We're going to balance personal rights with social duties. So what force are you going to use against us to impose your notion of social duties, I wonder? We're going to prize truth, beauty, love, and seeking harmony with the infinite. Okay, your version of the infinite? I'm sorry, but what you're not saying is you're going to let us find our own path? And the final one, 10, it says, be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. Well, it sounds like they want to remove a whole lot of people from this earth to accomplish that goal. Well, today the news is, and I'll jump to the punchline here, that today the news is a photograph of the Georgia Guidestones, and apparently someone who's skilled in demolitions got at them, and I see a pile of rubble. A couple of the pillars are still standing, mind you, but there's a whole lot of rubble where some of it used to be. There's and severe damage to the other stones. Somebody did not take kindly to this notion of we enlightened people are going to control you and your future. And
excuse me, Thomas. Where is this? You said Georgia, but does that mean it's in the state of Georgia, or does that mean it's next to the Crimean Sea?
Yeah, the state of Georgia in America.
Okay,
this is where this exists, and like I said, erected in 1980, and the source of the funding, who put it there, all has been covered up. Allegedly, people have died who knew about this, and at least one person I saw interviewed said they will never, ever tell because they were sworn to secrecy. Okay. And R.C. Christian is the name of – is apparently a pseudonym for whoever is behind this, which I was told means Rosicrucian, but there are other theories as well. Anyway – there's a lot of debate about this, but I see that some rebellious person out there or team of people who really understands explosives, because it takes some real understanding to destroy a stone that big and thick. It takes some real understanding. So they did it in, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there next. Will it suddenly be replaced with a new set in the middle of the night? I don't know, but I'm sure all eyes are going to be on this because it's kind of a statement of the New World Order and where they're taking us. By the way, if you go to the website at revolution.radio, there's a chat area there, and I kind of watch the chat area while we do our show. because people can throw in comments or other news blips for us to bring up while we're talking about things. And we have a lot of our local, our regular smart, talented, and no doubt very beautiful and handsome people in there. Dude Guy, Tango Ultra Master, Lady Horse, Laura Bella, Eco Flower, and all the rest of you. I can't go down the whole list right now. Yes, and those stones, by the way, were made of granite. That's a pretty hard stone. So someone really knowledgeable about explosives took them down. Very interesting. All right, and the interesting thing to me is that the stones explain that they have this sense of justice that's going to be brought. Justice, right? They're going to protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. But what does that mean, really? And I think this might be a good time for John Chambers, Mr. Constitution, to maybe talk about this notion of justice a little bit. What do you say, John?
Well, thank you very much. That's a very nice lead, and I appreciate that excellent, although long introduction, because it was a perfect setup for me. Thank you very
good
much.
Good golly.
No, I had never heard of these granite monuments to a new world order there, but that's, and it is interesting that somebody decided to take it down. You know, I was talking to one of my, actually my proofreader, my new book is, I just finished making all the changes that the proofreader found, and she asked me, I saw a survey that was done recently. Let me see if I can pull this up here. And I think she found it on NPR, because in my readers, the readers that I have, I have liberals, I have independents, I have very conservatives. I have all kinds of people, and she happens to be somebody who voted for Barack Obama twice, and all that. But she said, I found this survey on NPR, and I went to find it, and I could only find it on AmericanMilitaryNews.com, which is not NPR. It is that 28% of U.S. voters are open to an armed revolt against the government.
Holy smokes.
Isn't that interesting?
Is this in the sense of because the government's not obeying the Constitution, or because the government's not doing what we want?
No, they didn't say which way it was, because there are going to be some people who are doing it just because they want chaos. There's going to be a certain percentage that are that. And I had to kind of explain that to her, because she was alarmed by this. And I'm like, no. Some of it is because they're already at war, like Antifa and that sort of thing. And then there's a number of them, and I'll bet that most of the 28% are people that just want to be left alone. But mm-hmm. I just
wanted to point out that 28%, that's just the number of people who are willing to say that to a total stranger who's calling them on the phone. You know, how many people do you know would admit it? Not very many. It must be much higher than 28.
Well, Dagny, between you and me, 100% of the people we know would admit it.
Well. Oh, no, they wouldn't. No. It's funny that I think or playing close to their chest and would never admit it to a stranger on the phone. For all they know, it's the FBI calling.
Well, yeah, that's true. What it says, what the question was, I'll just read what the article says. 1 in 4 Americans believe it may, quote, soon be necessary to take up arms. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm ready to go to war with them right now. It doesn't mean that what it means is that something may happen that will get me to the point where I'm going to have to do this. And like I said, there's a few that are already at war because they just like chaos. But her question was, of these 28%, or 25%, one in four of these 28%. What, you know, what's the plan? What do we do after that? What is it after that? And they said, well, you know, some people have a plan to, just as Thomas said, restore the Constitution. That's what it's about, is to restore law so that we can live in peace. And others have just to create chaos for Lord knows what their plan is.
Let me read something to you. I have an answer to that, John. Shortly after Britain lost the War of 1812, the Democrat Party was created, and it was essentially as a weapon for foreign powers to commit sabotage, assassinations, and other things, and also use our political system to stop the progress of Americanism. And they had created this elite Knights of the Golden Circle, and these are the guys like John Wilkes Booth and Jesse James and others who were the ones who would do the dirty work. They were the ones who would commit sabotage and assassinations and such. And there's this fascinating quote from one of the KGC founders, Albert Pike, and he explains what's going on. Ready?
Okay.
Here we go. We shall unleash – and by the way, it's about why they're trying to create chaos. And you'll see what they're doing when you look at what is actually happening today. So here we go. We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm which – in all of its horror, will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism, the origin of savagery and of the most bloody turmoil. Then everywhere, the citizens, forced to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries, will exterminate those destroyers of civilization, and the multitude, disillusioned with Christianity, whose deistic spirits will form direction and leadership, their anxious for an ideal, but without knowledge where to render its adoration. Like, they don't know where they're going to go afterwards, right? So they say they will receive the pure light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, brought finally out into public view, a manifestation which will result from a general reactionary movement, which will allow the destruction of Christianity and atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time.
And what is the date on that?
This goes back to the early 1800s.
No. What's the date that he said that?
Absolute exact date. I don't have it handy. I just had pasted the quote into the chat area and was reading it back.
Oh, okay.
I'll go back. This is prior to the
– we'll say there's something like 1820s or so?
Prior to the U.S. Civil War, because the Civil
War
forced these guys to go underground and sort of create an underground deep state movement. They were still – you know, they still pursued the same agenda, working with foreign powers to disrupt and take down the U.S. from the inside. And you can see what he's describing. They're trying to get the atheists and the Christians to fight each other. This is the point of, you know, the gay pride parades, the drag queen hours, and the stuff where they try to be as antagonistic and repulsive as possible. They want a Christian backlash so desperately that they're out there screeching right now that Christians this, Christians that, when they're not, there is no backlash yet, you know?
Right.
But they're
right,
trying
no,
to frame
and,
it
no,
that
no,
way.
And there won't be, and because I think most of these 28% are just those who want to be left alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's really what America is about. It's just, leave me alone. I can run my own life.
I kind of connect that quote to the Georgia Guidestones a little bit. That
yeah,
is
it, oh, very much so. Very much yeah. so. I was as you were saying, and I was going, these are the same guys.
Yeah,
these are the same guys. Exactly. So I wanted to take a look at Liberty and Justice. So I've got my new book, Liberty and Justice. And
so, in case you guys didn't know, John Chambers is a prolific author who has written books about the Constitution, about business management, about liberty and justice, about the forms of government. He's written a lot of really cool books. And are these all available on Amazon now?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Look up his works, John Chambers, and could give a couple of titles just so they'll find the right author.
Well, my absolute favorite one is What is a Republic? Because if you don't know what a republic is, the Constitution makes a republic. But if you don't know what a republic is, you have no idea. Then what is this document? You just you just don't know what it's doing or what it's trying to do. But and a lot of people have come up because I asked people. I said, okay, so what is Republican? In fact, when I do a Constitution study meetings series of them, the first one is always, okay, what is a Republican? I just have people tell me, oh, you know, it's representation, and oh, it's the rule of law, and oh, it's this, and then oh, it's that. And I go, yeah, okay, those are all parts of it. But really, if I were to ask you to describe a house, and you told me about the barbecue in the backyard, I'd say, okay, that's true, but that's not really the house. And the barbecue in the backyard is what rule of law is. You got to go through the house to get to rule of law.
And you, if you ask me what is a republic, and I were to say, well, it's you know, people having elections and electing people, I'd be missing the mark by quite a bit, wouldn't I?
Well, that would be that's a representative democracy, is what that is, which is a part of a republic, but it's not what a republic is. A republic that's like one room in the house, but it's not the whole house. And in order to understand what a republic is, you have to understand what each of the rooms are, and then how that room of the representatives that you elect, how that fits into it.
John has done a really good job of explaining the three basic types of government, and how our republic is actually a combination of all three, and each serves its own particular purpose in this artificial. It's a far more complex structure than any natural, like what people will do in a moment's notice to try to govern themselves. The republic is a very carefully crafted structure, and it incorporates all three of the different types of government.
Yeah, and I didn't come up with it. I had to go back to Aristotle and Plato.
Right. They laid these things out. Ancient Greece,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, they laid that out, and Polybius actually a little bit later during the Romans was the one that kind of gave it a fine tuning. But
could I tell the folks just a really quick summary of that? I mean, this is, you're talking around it, and they're probably curious.
Right. Nail it.
Okay, so the executive branch, like a president, is like a monarch. Like a king, and that's one form of government. The judiciary is like an aristocracy, because you have these sets of elite judges that pronounce law. And then you have something that's like a democracy, which is the Congress, where people are elected and they do things. So
they represent the will of the people, right?
Right. And so what you've got is a hybrid of a monarchy, an aristocracy, and a democracy. And that, you put them all together and you get a republic. Did I do okay, John?
Yeah, that was pretty good. I'm going to give you a gold star.
Oh, thank you.
To get on her forehead.
And every republic has a constitution. What the constitution does is describe those three branches and how those three branches fit together and how they work together and how one can override the other doing this, but the other can override the other doing that, and just how they all fit together. And that is the constitution of that republic. And every republic has to have a constitution. And it actually kind of gets me when people say, oh, yeah, we live in a constitutional republic. And I go, hey, that's like saying water is wet. No, because every republic has a constitution. So you have to understand what the pieces are and how they fit together to understand what this particular republic is. And you can have a republic that sways more towards the monarchy, and you can have another like they have, for instance, in England, or you can have another republic that sways more towards the towards an aristocracy, which is what the Soviet socialist republics, they were republics, but they had, the Soviet was the aristocracy that ran them. Each republic will have a different way of putting itself together. And when they came up with the United States, they said, we want a republic, and we want it evenly balanced, and so we came up with what we came up with, and that's what the Constitution is. So there you go.
There it is.
Thank you, Lori.
So you write about.
The name of that book is What is a Republic? It's actually a very inexpensive little book, and it's something that anybody should have. And I've had people, like, for instance, the mayor of the town I live in came to one of my classes. He took that, he got that book, and then later on he got so jazzed about the fact that he understood what government is supposed to do that he ran and became mayor. And I would like to have a lot of us understand what government is about so much that you go off and you start taking the reins, because we are the ones that have to take the reins. We can't just sit around and go, oh, those guys are so bad. No, we have to stand up and do something. But in order to do something, we have to know how it's supposed to work and know how to make it work. Excuse me, I'm now going to get off my soapbox. Thank you.
Well, this is good because it's important. And whoever decides to defend the legitimate Constitution and our form of government, whether it's just verbally on social media like Twitter or Facebook, you're going to come under attack. And if you're going to step into political office, and you should if you've got the nerve to do this, they're going to throw all kinds of mud at you. But, you know, this is what it takes. You know, Thomas Jefferson lamented a couple of years into his presidency that the media threw everything at him they could to destroy him. I have an exact quote about that, but he suffered the same thing Donald Trump did, because he stood up for the legitimate function of our government, and the people who didn't want that tried everything they could to destroy him in the public eye. So that'll happen. You know, we see politicians stepping up today who say, hey, guys, this is what the Constitution says. This is what it means. And they're the ones who get targeted by the mainstream media for all kinds of hate and bashing and mobs of people at their door and all that. How does that happen in our nation that's supposed to be, you know, governed by our Constitution? And how does it happen that anyone who tries to do that comes under attack, but not the people who are trying to overthrow our Constitution? And on that note, by the way, NPR apparently used to have a tradition that on the 4th of July they would read aloud the Declaration of Independence. Well, they've put a stop to that because they want to have an equality discussion instead, because, you know, the Declaration of Independence is flawed, and they decided to start picking it apart instead, right?
Well, let's see, that actually goes to that kind of thing is exactly the kind of thing that I noticed that I said, okay, I have to write this book, which is, if you don't mind, I'll give you the title of it. It's not up yet. I'm right now, I've finished writing it, and the proofreading is done and all that kind of stuff. I'm working on how I'm going to market it and all that. But anyway, right now it's called Liberty and Justice: How to Move People Beyond Partisan Politics. And it is, and exactly this thing with NPR, deciding we're not going to read the Declaration of Independence anymore. It's because they've come up against, basically, there's two basic forms of government. And I know Dagny talked about the three forms that go into a republic, and those are the three basic forms of government: are aristocracy, monarchy, and democracy. But actually, it even boils down to simpler than that. There's two basic forms of government. One is top down, the other is bottom up. That's basically what it is. The Constitution and the Declaration of Independence is bottom up. However, anyone who wants to have power, who wants to lord it over people, over other people, are going to desire the top down. And any remnant or piece of we have a top up, a bottom up, bubbling up, they got to tamp that down and stop it, because they need to have a top-down government so that they can control things. And liberty and justice between you and me, when we're just living life, it's actually very easy, and we could define it, and we can attain it. We can do it. Every time you walk into a store and you pick up something and you walk out of the store and you pay on your way out, with liberty, you picked it up. That's what liberty is. On the way out, you paid for it. That's what justice is. We do liberty and justice all the time. However, it gets messed up. And the reason it gets messed up is because the top-down people want to run it themselves. They want to have liberty and justice for themselves, but not for us, for the bottom up. And you and I, and all of your listeners, anyone who would be attracted to listening to you, desires a bottom up. We want to live our own lives. We want to be left alone.
Mutual consent, basically. I agree with you to pay a price for this, and you sell it to me for that price, and that's justice, because each of us has gotten what we wanted and agrees that, yes, that this is the correct transaction between us.
And we're at liberty to do that. Exactly right. But then we have the top-down ones who try to mess it up. So what this book does is, first of all, describe what liberty and justice are, just as we did right there. But I go back to Plato, and I take apart his arguments of all the different possibilities on what justice is and the purpose of justice, which is to ensure that we have liberty. That's the purpose of it. Because since most of us most of the time can do that, that's fine. Then what goes wrong? Then I go into all the things that go wrong, which is the top down and the different forms that the top down takes, the different ways that it comes about and ways that you can spot it in your environment, which you just talked about with NPR, is going, we're not going to do that top. We're not going to do that bottom up Declaration of Independence anymore. We're going to do this top down thing because the edict is that we all have to do whatever it is, gender-neutral bathrooms or whatever. That's the edict. So
if you put a word in front of justice, such as social or racial or economic or whatever, is it still justice?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Because I looked at this very closely, at very carefully, because I was doing my research, and I was writing and so on, I was going, well, so it's obvious that our justice system that we have, it does not always mete out what we would know to be justice. So what do we do as the alternative? Oh, that's where social justice comes from. Because we go, okay, if we have a system and it doesn't work, we have to, our sense of justice has to come back to us again. But when that's taken over by top down people who now start to use it as a way for them to stay in power and pretend that it's social justice, it has now turned it around and corrupted it.
One of the surest signs of that is when this social or racial or economic justice, where they decide to manipulate the rules to intentionally disadvantage one particular group to benefit another group. They say, well, you guys had it too good or something, so we're going to punish you. We're going to take things from you and take away your ability to engage equally in things. And I believe that's what happens when we start tacking that word in front, because invariably that's all they're doing.
Well, you know, I've asked people who use the term climate justice, and no one has ever been able to give me an answer. I have no idea what climate justice is.
It's just like, word it's salad.
It's like climate justice. You mean it rains on some people more than others? Oh my God! I mean,
it's unjust. We need to fix that. Take the water away from those people over there.
It's difficult.
May I point out something?
Yes, please.
Oh, thank you. That when you have people that get in a position of power, if they're there to basically loot the system for themselves and their followers, then they try to usurp more power. For example, Nancy Pelosi, she's supposedly in charge of the the Congress. Well, she's been taking on all sorts of law enforcement powers by having the Capitol Police have branch offices in different states by going and arresting these January 6th political prisoners. You know, she's not staying in her lane. She's trying to assert law enforcement power. And by doing so, I mean, the purpose of that doing that is to get control enough that they can stay in power and also use their power to loot the system for themselves and for their supporters.
You get a similar
thing with the executive branch. You know, the kind of things where, for example, Obama was saying, I have a pen and a phone, you know, and doing absolutely ridiculous executive orders, you know, that basically executive branch doing administrative law, you know, we say, okay, the EPA can just make up rules without having to do any, actually make any laws in the Congress. You know, they try to assert power from other branches of government in order to have enough sufficient power to stay in office, you know, forcibly and loot everybody.
And that is the key. That's the key to top-down government. That's what they try to do, is they try to stay in power. And in fact, I go back into a little historical activity going back about where that started and how and what it is. What there's two factors, actually, that allow that particular – what you're talking about there to come about. And at the beginning of this country, those two factors did not exist. They did – I mean – they were nascent because it's kind of part of human nature. And if you allow that piece of human nature to run wild, you end up with having these two factors combined together. And then we end up with this administrative state like that. And I track that. I track that in the book.
Mm.
Nice.
Yeah. Pelosi is a really good example of that, doing that. I mean, these January 6th committee nonsense that they're doing, they're trying to set themselves up as judges as well. I mean, they're taking on they're usurping the judicial branch, they're usurping the executive branch, when they're really just supposed to sit there and make laws and nothing else.
Right. But it is all, and it is all. I mean, they've even admitted it. What was it? Somebody, I heard Liz Cheney came out and said, well, the reason that we're doing this is to make sure that Trump never gets to be president again. That's political. It's strictly political. And you have in order to be political, you have to use all three branches like that. You have to take on the powers of all three branches, which is why you separate those powers. Which is why the Constitution separates those powers. And a number of the Federalist Papers and Anti-Federalist Papers were about how we keep those separate the Federalist Papers saying, we keep them separate. That's what this is about, because we're keeping them separate. And the Antrich Federalists say, we don't think you're keeping them separate enough. So, I mean, it's like, so everyone knows we need to have to keep them separate. And as soon as somebody starts taking it all together, and the figurehead of that woman, whose name shall not be mentioned by me at any rate, is a perfect example of someone who is trying to be all three heads at once. Of course, you can look at her and you can go, oh yeah, I can see that is a three-headed monster, isn't it? Okay. Never mind. I'm sorry.
What happens after a coup? It's the illegal seizure of power to destroy political opposition and cement the coup in place. And this is what we're watching right now. So the U.S. government was overthrown, especially in this last election. And the coup is in effect, and these guys are cementing power. They're using, you know, ungranted powers. The Constitution gives them no authority to do what they're doing. They're rolling ahead, and nobody's stopping them.
Okay. That's not quite true. That's not quite true.
Please give me hope.
Almost true, because you had mentioned about at the beginning of this that there's a number of things that have happened just recently that make a Constitution interesting and good for this one, because there are a number of things that happened where there have been Supreme Court decision, which is another branch of the government with another
So the Supreme Court has stepped out of line with the coup. They're not going along with it. They're actually looking at the Constitution, seeing what it says, and saying, you know what, we have to rule according to the rule of law because that's our job. Now, it's not unanimous, mind you. It's 6 of 9. The fact that there's a split decision is a sign of danger anyway, but at least there's a majority.
But it does point out when they say that we have those who favor top down government will tell you that now the Supreme Court is out of line and it is ultra MAGA, which I go I just love that because that means that they recognize that bottom down government is being that's what MAGA is. And they're going, we don't like it.
Ruled by the people.
We don't like it. Yes, it's ruled by the people, which is
by exactly we the people of the United States, like exactly. The Constitution says.
Yep. And the states too. So
it's fascinating to watch because all of a sudden the Constitution is back into discussion and there's a mad scramble to confuse people about what it says and means. This is why the work you do is so important because there are others who are definitely trying to push people's understanding in all the wrong directions. And all they're really doing is making excuses for their totalitarian agenda and their willingness to bully, threaten, even try to murder those who get in the way. That's all they're doing by spouting the nonsense they do about our Constitution. So y'all, all your listeners out there, if you have any ideas about what the Constitution says or means, but you haven't read through it and you haven't gone through John Chambers' Constitution study course, you probably are wrong. It's a saying. He does a great Constitution study.
Thank you for the vote of confidence. But there have been a few places where even you, Thomas, have said, oh, does it really say that? And I've changed my mind because of what you've said. So.
I got to say, it's an education to actually go through word by word, line by line, and understand the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and understand that they did not solve all the problems. I mean, these British colonies broke off from their own government and, you know, just by the stroke of a pen, they didn't solve all the problems, but they laid out the nation's goals. And this is why MAGA people or whatever you want to call them, why Americans, why Republicans revere the Declaration of Independence and Constitution, because they set the goals. And there was a lot of fighting going on because a lot of people didn't want those goals to be met. You know, they defeated the Democrat Party in the Civil War to achieve one of those most important goals, which is human equality, to get rid of slavery and to get to free slaves, make them into full citizens, give everybody full rights of citizens. That took a bloody war to the death just to drag them kicking and screaming into allowing that to happen. They didn't allow it. They had to be killed. I mean, it was just that bad. So the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, people point back and say, well, there was still slavery and, well, there was this and that. And women couldn't vote. Well, okay. But they laid out the goals, and the struggle has been long to achieve them because the other side is digging its hooves in and braying hard and saying, we will not budge. Okay.
Yeah, that's actually very good because what they did is they laid out just to tack on to what you were saying because they laid out the goal, the aim, where we're headed. It's what we want, bottom up. That's what we try to do, and we're doing bottom up. And then with the Constitution, they laid out a process to allow that to happen, or to facilitate that. It works. It did work. Pretty well for about the first 50 years or so, and then those two factors that I'm talking about started coming in. The first factor came in, and when that became pretty well established, then that allowed the second factor. Boom, and that's what we have. That's why we have the administrative state and all of that jazz that we have now, and that's what the book is all about.
Oh, can I bring up about the EPA ruling by the Supreme Court, because that just drove a stake right into the heart of this whole administrative state. You know, the executive branch has been setting up all these agencies and then giving them the power to make rules and regulations, which is essentially making law, which is the job of the Congress. Mm-hmm. And it's a monster. It's grown into a monster. And the EPA making rules regarding carbon credits or whatever they've whatever the specific was. It's interesting because the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. You there's demarcation. You are on the executive side. You cannot make law. That's the legislative's job.
Well, yeah, and that, well, see, and the Supreme Court actually has been slapping down the EPA in particular, but a lot of different agencies, because they step outside their bounds. Like when the Clean Air and Water Act, the Clean Water Act, you know, talks about the navigable waters and they have all the charge over the navigable waters and so on. And the EPA attempted to make that into the seasonal spring that goes across the back of your property as navigable waters, and then therefore they can come in and tell you how to do that. And they got slapped down for that, and they came back the next year and tried to do it again anyway, and the Supreme Court slapped them down again for it. It is a constant battle because these guys kind of don't give up. And what makes it worse is not just Dagny that they decide to do this, which is the example you gave and the example I gave were that, but even more pernicious than that is that Congress says, well, here's something we want to do, and we're going to let the agency decide how they're going to do that, which is gives them latitude to do all that, which then the courts have taken the stance that, well, since the agency has latitude, pretty much whatever they say is what we will allow. Mm-hmm. And what we need to do is get it back to Congress, and this is where voting comes in, is you have your Congress people, and Congress can rein them in, and they should. So it goes back to that. So it's because it's not just that we have evildoers in the executive branch who make their own rules, but we also have Congress who's too damn lazy to protect the people.
Well, does the Constitution include a clause saying that the federal government will be permitted to regulate environmental activities at all? I haven't seen it.
No, but you know how they do that, and I'm not sure.
Here it comes.
I'm not sure if the if environment fits in this exactly, but usually the way that they are able to do those kinds of things are with are by treaties. Because treaties become part of the law of the land as well.
And isn't that interesting? So that's a crime against the Constitution, because the very idea of the Constitution and the rule of law is these are the things the Constitution says. This is what you're permitted to do inside the U.S. and what you're and you can't do anything else. The Constitution says that, Amendment 10.
Right.
And
let me give you the
giving
example.
That power to foreign countries?
No. Oh, no, it doesn't give it to the foreign country. No, that's – you misunderstood me on that.
Well, okay, I didn't quite finish, though.
Okay. All right. Oh, that's true. You didn't. But I'm going to cut in anyway.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Please.
I'll give you one example in particular that I thought was just completely fascinating. It was back in 1912 or so. There was a fellow in Arkansas who was shooting geese. The feds came and they said, you can't shoot geese because these are protected geese or whatever it was. And it went to court and the court said, no, there's no law against that. And that's not in the Constitution. You can't do that. Then the next year or two, there was a treaty that was signed with Canada for migratory birds. And because those birds were then migrating, a couple of years later, 1916 or whenever it was, same fellow, or maybe it was a different fellow, goes and shoots some geese. He gets arrested. Now he goes to the same judge in the same court. And this time the judge said, well, there's a treaty between Canada and the U.S. to protect these birds. And so and Congress then made a law enacting that treaty, which is, you know, thou shalt not kill birds or whatever it was. And you've broken that law from Congress to enact a treaty in pursuance of a treaty, which is under Article 1, Section 6. And there it is. And that's basically how they get into your backyard like that.
Exactly. And I would say actually the court ruling, the ruling is correct, but the treaty itself, I would suggest, is not. Because
Well, now it depends. What you need to do is you need to get the senators, two-thirds of the senators, to say no and not do the treaty.
I think the Supreme Court could step in, and here's why. Because the Constitution, it's pretty clear. These are the things that the federal government can and cannot do regarding the American people and the states. And to then say, well, but if our president and, you know, the Senate agree with some other nation that we're going to take away all your guns and we're going to force you to all wear pink and we're going to force you to marry llamas just because there's a treaty with some other country, even though the Constitution does not allow that power to do those things to the American people, what they'd be doing essentially is saying that they're giving the power of one insane president that power to that guy to simply agree with France that they're going to take away all of our guns, and that overrides our Constitution. And I submit that the treaty power must be inferior to the controls on federal government in our Constitution. It must be. And the job of the Senate is to say, you know what? Nope. That treaty violates the powers granted in our Constitution on the American people. You can't do that in a treaty. You know, treaties are for, okay, what are the tariffs going to be between these two nations? Or how much coal will we accept from your nation or sell to your nation? International stuff. But reaching within our nation cannot be – the Constitution cannot be overridden by treaties. I would say that's the intended effect.
Yes and no.
Okay. So there's my take on it.
No, because the perfect example you have is guns. And we have the Second Amendment, and if there were a treaty that attempted to do that, which contravened something that's in the Constitution, which is the Second Amendment, then you have a real constitutional issue, and it does have to go to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court can say, no, I'm sorry, that violates this other part of the other part of the Constitution. And so this part, you can't have that.
So here's something to look That's at. True. I'm looking but at however, a headline. Oh, okay, go ahead. Sorry, you weren't.
Well, I was going to say, but if you have internal workings like, for instance, about interstate transfer of illegal drugs, that's by a treaty. That's because of a treaty.
Really?
Yeah. That's from the whatever it was, 1906 treaty on opiates or whatever it is, and then various additions that have been done to that since then. It's all to enact a treaty in order to, you know, reduce the opium trade or whatever it was at the time.
Wow. I would have argued that it would make sense that the federal government has the authority to protect one state from being harmed by another. So if, let's say, one of the port states decided to import a whole lot of opium and that got distributed to the U.S. for harmful effects. The Commerce Clause could step in at that point.
And there was. I believe it was Kansas sued Colorado or something, because Colorado had was growing marijuana and it was making its way into Kansas. And Kansas went to the Supreme Court to have it decided. But I don't think the Supreme Court accepted it. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
I'm looking at a headline.
But that wasn't our current Supreme Court either, was it?
No. We need a real Supreme Court that'll uphold the Constitution. These guys seem to be doing okay. We only have like 2 minutes left before the break, so I want to read a headline here.
Well, okay, listen, I just have to tell you this real quick. Our son came over, so I'm going to need to have to quit at 4 o'clock.
Okay. We'll get Dagny to talk more. She's been a little bit quiet, partly because she's ill. So thank you for joining us. So I'm going to read this headline. Here it comes. Because you need You need to hear this one. Carbon food labels may be coming. Here's what they mean. And what they're saying is that the carbon cost of producing certain foods can now be applied to foods, right? So that you can have a carbon expense account to say you can only purchase foods up to this amount of carbon creation. What a way to limit food. And I'm going to talk about this in the second half. I'm going to talk about the UN, a very interesting article from the UN about the benefits of world hunger, why they're trying to create world hunger. I'm going to explain this a little bit in a second. I have a fascinating article, came right from the UN website. So look at this. You look at this. They're trying to find ways.
I wish I could stay for that, but I have to leave right now. Thank you very much for having me, and I'll talk to you all later.
Thank you, Mr. Constitution. John Chambers. Check out his books on Amazon, everybody. Yep. Fascinating books, and if you want to get involved in civics discussions, you really need to know what's what. And John Chambers has produced some books that are very effective at helping people to understand what is really what. And you'll find that there are a lot of people making very very much incorrect arguments on social media now about the 14th Amendment and how it protects a right to an abortion and gay marriage and all these other things. And you know what? No, it doesn't. Never was intended to. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the intentional starvation being caused by the UN and their explanation of it, as well as some other fun issues in the second half. Thank you for tuning in to Intel Warriors on Revolution Radio, and take a break, about 4 minutes. We'll be back. Catch you then.
If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays? For Voices on the Wind, with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hello, Revolution Radio listeners. Welcome back to Intel Warriors. Revolution Radio is a free speech zone, so please check out the website at revolution.radio. Check out the schedule for Studio A and Studio B, a lot of great programs there. And also, please contribute. Keep the servers going. We have no corporate sponsors, political sponsors, none of that. We do this for free, and your contributions keep the shows alive. Our website is intelwarriors.com. That's our website, and we post a lot of really interesting information there, and please check that out as well. Hey, Dagny, are you back?
Yep, I'm right here, Thomas.
Cool. Now, Dagny's a little bit ill, so she's been quiet for the first half of the show, but did you have any?
I've got a fever, so if I say something outrageous, I got an excuse, I guess. I'll try to.
That's right.
I'll try to be very careful.
She's a little bit feverish. So the fevered speech. I want to just pick up with something I mentioned right before the break. This headline, it says, carbon food labels may be coming. Here's what they mean. And what it is foods are being given a carbon score, right? How much carbon is emitted to produce this food? And this is a way of controlling how much food people can get, or perhaps the quality of food. Why
well,
only those?
I got to ask Thomas, who's the one who picks the numbers for this?
Yeah.
I mean, who do you have to pay off to get a good number?
Well, exactly. And to get permission to spend more carbon credits to get more food, right?
Right.
Who do you have to pay off? Of course, the privileged elites. Nancy Pelosi is going to get plenty of extra credits. You know, of course, the ruling elite will, so she can buy all kinds of luxury ice creams to fill her freezer. But this is one of the tools in an arsenal. And, Grog, I'm going to have to check out that video shortly. But, yeah, by the way, guys, I am watching the chat area on revolution.radio while we do the show. So you guys are throwing all kinds of really interesting links. But I want you to think about this. What is behind this, the destruction of fertilizer supplies, the ability to move food, the ability to produce food, Joe Biden ordering our gasoline companies to put ethanol into the gas all year round that, of course, destroys corn. That's food. And all around the world, this is taking hold, these efforts to destroy our ability to produce food. And the UN has an answer to that in an article titled The Benefits of World Hunger. And I have posted an archive.org link to that article now in the chat area because the original article has been taken down. They don't want people reading it for some reason. So I'm just going to read you the final paragraph of that article. This is on the UN website. Here it is. For those of us at the high end of the social ladder, ending hunger globally would be a disaster. If there were no hunger in the world, who would plow the fields? Who would harvest our vegetables? Who would work in the rendering plants? Who would clean our toilets? We would have to produce our own food and clean our own toilets. No wonder people at the high end are not rushing to solve the hunger problem. For many of us, hunger is not a problem, but an asset.
This is actually a UN document?
It was on the freaking UN website, www.un.org/en/chronicle/article/benefits-world-hunger. And
wow.
Yes, and so it was, and I don't think it was being facetious because the whole article is about the motivation for people to work. And they said that, and the guy was explaining that when people are well-fed, they're not motivated to get off their couch and start stop playing with their Xbox and go do something that's difficult. The way to motivate people to labor, to become your laboring slaves, is to make sure they're always hungry and have to struggle to provide for themselves and therefore for the ruling elite. This is what socialists normally do to any society they take over. They create hunger and shortage to drive people to becoming willing slave labor. And the ultimate result, of course, is that the ruling elite get control over what they produce, so the ruling elite live like kings, as this author said, and you know, and the working class are driven to constantly labor because it's the only way they'll ever be able to eat. So ending world hunger is not a goal of theirs at all. Wealth redistribution, maybe. I mean, you know, looting tens of billions of dollars from the U.S. to give to corrupt socialist governments abroad to keep their ruling elite living fat and happy. That's a goal, but not solving the problem. And the problem is, invariably, government getting in the way of people producing what they need to live well. Government has to interfere, as you're seeing Joe Biden do now, killing our access to fuel, fertilizer, the ability to simply move food around, killing our access to products being produced in the United States, creating power shortages, right, energy shortages, intentionally to create a hungry population who are desperate. And that's a population that will slave just to put food on their children's plates.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about this Venezuela timeline I've got in front of me here. They're a good example of how this is done. You know, it only took one generation of progressive, what they call progressive, makes it sound like it's good. I guess a statist might be a more accurate thing. Leadership to plunge their country into essentially civil war and misery, you know, to the point where they're eating their pets and zoo animals. Let me back up to 1992. Venezuela was the third richest country in the Western Hemisphere. Very profitable. 1997, it became the second largest purchaser of F-150. In 2001, three years later, they voted for a socialist president under the argument of income inequality.
We have to fix income inequality, they said. So let's vote for the socialist because he's promising to build back better. Right.
Right.
Do go on.
So then 3 years later, 2004, private health care was completely socialized. You know, your basic Obamacare. Then 2007, you know, 3 years later, all higher education became free. So, you know, you can go to college and you don't have to actually learn anything useful. You don't have to pay it back. You don't have to think about what good it'll do. I mean, if you want to be your own little tin Caesar and, you know, study politics and stuff, you can do that. And no one's going to make you pay back. I mean, impractical. Okay, so 2 years later, 2009, the socialists banned the private ownership of guns. You know, deja vu, that's what they're trying to do now.
Well, you know, for the children to reduce gun violence, of course. We have to take away private guns.
Yep. And then in 2012, that's 3 years later, Bernie Sanders was praising what they called their, quote, American dream, unquote. 2 years after that, 2014, the opposition leaders are imprisoned. So all of a sudden you've got people, basically political enemies, being locked away. That's kind of what they're trying to do on, to some extent, you know, basically arresting people like Roger Stone and Peter Navarro and so on. These people are the opposition, and they're making up bogus reasons to imprison them.
The logic behind that is the party is now in control of the state, and anyone who complains about the party or opposes the party is an enemy of the state and therefore needs to be found out. Find out who you talk to, who what you talk about. Oh, you complain about the party. That makes you an enemy of the state, and therefore you're a danger. So they start by going after the more influential political people like, you know, Donald Trump, Roger Stone, folks like that. They try to take down the leadership first, but they don't stop there. Do go
right.
on.
Okay. So, you know, another example being the January 6th political prisoners. Okay. So then 2 years later, in 2016, they had started having massive food and healthcare shortages, which became widespread. That sounds kind of familiar too to me, frankly. I mean, the way things are going on food, it looks like we're heading for some very interesting times with a lack of food. 2017, 2 years later, well, pardon me, 1 year later, the Constitution and elections were suspended. So they didn't even bother with voting anymore. They just say, hey, we're in charge. We're going to use an excuse of, you know, unrest, you know, maybe even false flags and such. So we're going to say, okay, we're going to suspend the Constitution and elections. That was in 2017. Then in 2019, unarmed citizens were actually massacred by their own Venezuelan government. That is the path. And from 1992 to 2019, that's one generation, basically, of political, of running down that political path. Something else I should point out is that Dominion, you know, who basically we can thank to a large extent for stealing our elections with their bogus machinery, they were formed, they were founded in Venezuela. You know, you have to wonder if they had real elections from the time that Dominion existed. And now we have that same situation here. We're kind
I'm saying no. I don't believe they did.
Yeah, I think probably Dominion was a part of the reason that they moved down this path of socialization is because they were able to, because Dominion was doing their elections for them. And now we have Dominion in numerous countries, including ours. But you can see how that happens. Venezuela is a good example of the path that they take. And if you fold in Dominion, you can see how they managed to run down that path so fast.
So there was a rigged election in Venezuela, of course. Maduro was accused of running a fraudulent election. And looking at this on the U.S. Embassy in Georgia, the nation of Georgia, explaining this, that countries around the world are calling the illegitimate Maduro regime's recent attempts to undermine democracy in Venezuela a sham. So anyway, what they're saying, though, is that there are fake elections, of course, going on in Venezuela, where the Dominion software comes from. And who knows? Who knows who won correctly, who really won and who didn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, a similar thing happened in Ukraine, 2014. A bunch of globalists, the liberal world order types, got in there, did a false flag type thing where they murdered hundreds of people, including police officers, you know, sniper type situation. Kind of reminds me of that thing that happened in Las Vegas.
Yes. You know?
But anyway, that happened, and the election appeared to go to the, you know, the Westerners. And what happened was that the eastern part of Ukraine, which was people who spoke Russian and, you know, have Russian heritage, Slavs, they rejected it and said, this is a bogus election. We don't accept it. And that was the excuse for the Ukrainians on the west side, you know, with support of CIA and other, you know, Western
Soros
countries.
Obama, Biden, Victoria Nuland,
right?
Yeah,
the United
overthrew the elected government of Ukraine,
right? And so, and then they called the people who didn't accept the election separatists, and that gave them an excuse that, oh, you're separatists, you're, that means you're terrorists. Deja vu, folks.
language you're hearing them use against Americans right now,
and yeah. since
after they overthrew our government in 2020 election.
Right.
Same gang. The same gang did it, guys.
in the case of Ukraine, they basically had the army go in and start bombing the eastern portion of Ukraine. Artillery shells, just bombing civilian centers, just to try to pound them into submission. And they wouldn't. it didn't work to pound them entirely into submission. And so then they were going to go in, early in the year. They had, I think it was March 9th or something like that. There was plans for the Western powers to basically back the Ukrainians to go in and do a genocide on the Slavs on the eastern part of Ukraine. And so that's what then the Russians finally stepped in and said, no, we're not going to let you, do the genocide thing with all these Russian speaking people. You know, we're going to save the Slavs. And that's why Russia invaded to basically as a rescue mission, liberation in the eastern part of Ukraine. But this is a story that goes on over and over in history, where you'll get a bogus election, quite often facilitated by something like Dominion, where they have bogus machines doing bogus counts. People reject that, and then they get attacked as separatists or terrorists, and then violence breaks out. I can't help but wonder if at some point the United States will be in a Donbass, eastern Ukraine type situation, if people like Biden and Kamala Harris and these characters decide that they're going to get tough and send in the army to basically take down red parts of this country, red states.
They're already doing some things that are pretty close to that, such as sending the Capitol Police out into the states where they have no authority to supplant local police, to replace the law enforcement, local law enforcement. They're having the nationalized police go out and do that now. This is standard after a fascist coup. And then they're sending their FBI out to arrest and take down political opponents. Okay, they're going after the heads right now, but they will be going after the masses more and more. But the usual routine, though, is to starve people out. If socialists can starve people out, it's a way to avoid a fight. They'll come up with any excuse. Oh, golly, we have to have environmental controls. And, it's to save the environment. We have to cut off your ability to grow and move food around. Or they'll do things like that. So I think they're already waging war against the American people in the sense that they are trying to starve Americans out. They're creating shortage artificially where there doesn't need to be any. And they're directly shutting down our ability to harvest energy resources. And those resources are still getting harvested, but they're sent off to China. They're essentially helping China loot the United States of resources. If you guys ever saw the movie Oblivion, the big triangle in the sky sucking all the water off the planet Earth, that's what they're doing. This is what happens after the socialists conquer your nation. So we're at a point now where they may not have to send the military. They're just going to destroy the American people and subjugate them through hunger, through resource deprivation, inability to have reliable energy to produce anything, inability to run a business, through taxation and other regulations.
Also through inflation.
Inflation, of course. There's the big one.
Right.
They're destroying your ability to afford a retirement. That's for sure. Money's going to not mean anything very soon.
Well, yeah, it's just people who are on the financial edge, who don't have a lot of reserve. They're in a situation where it's going to start cutting into what they can eat, and it's going to be pressuring them to to give the government what it wants, because then in exchange they'll get some sort of a handout.
Yes. And that's a way of enslaving people. It's essentially creating a concentration camp where if you wish to be on the inside, you'll get your rations. If you go on the outside, you'll get nothing. You'll starve. This is how they do it. They break the ability of the people to provide for themselves and to do what they need to survive. So the only way to even survive is to walk willingly into that cage. That's the
right guns. Right. And normally you'd expect the reporters to step up and do something about it, but the media has been so bought off, the major media in the United States, that it's basically very difficult to, I mean, you have to go to alternative media or sometimes media from other countries to find out what's actually going on. Similarly, the Ukraine is doing something like that. They've shut down, you know, Zelensky, he's actually shut down any opposition parties, you know, essentially arresting any opposition parties, seized their assets, and proceeded to make it so that there was only one media organization. Yes. Now, Reporters Without Borders, nevertheless, they've got at least 9,000 reporters that are covering the fighting in Ukraine. They're running around out there covering it. And, you know, it's, in addition to risking their lives, they have to face difficulties in getting access to places, taking photos. Sometimes they actually get arrested. That's what's going on in Ukraine. That's what they want here. They want to have it where they can control the media completely. So far, they haven't been able to do it. The fact that we're talking to you today is evidence that they have not yet locked it down.
If any of you listeners have followed Tucker Carlson, in the past week he was in Brazil, and it's a nation that kind of stands alone right now because the communist Chinese have taken over pretty much all of South America, and they're trying to take Brazil. And the current president of Brazil was like their Donald Trump. He stood for the country. He stood for principles. And the mainstream media there went ballistic to try to smear him, to shut him down, to silence him. And yet he got elected anyway. And they're after him every single day. Never a kind word. He gave some so there were very interesting interviews that Tucker Carlson got in his trip down there to understand what's happening, because Brazil is one of the few nations that that stands against this new world order right now. And it was very revealing. If you get a chance, if you have some way to watch that series from last week, it's an eye opener. You should check it out. And this is the situation now, where all the nations that want to stand independently, that want to fend for themselves, provide for themselves, they're being toppled. This is an active operation. NATO is behind it. They've resorted to use of military force to kill and to destroy in order to topple nations. Libya, for example, Kosovo, you know, right? They bombed the hell out of Serbia to help the Islamists take over Kosovo.
That was the U.S. involved. Was NATO involved in that?
Yes, this was allegedly NATO, but they always use the U.S. military. They force us, the American people, to pay for their destruction of other countries. Our money goes into our military expenditures to destroy independent nations and under the NATO banner. But I'd call it the globalists. Soros, Mikhail Gorbachev, and a few other key people are big players in this. And this is just awful what they're doing. So we're in the situation where there are very few independent countries left that, you know, the globalists, and I'll point at China in this as well, they don't control. And Brazil is one of them. There are very few that are still independent. And by the way, the U.S. is not. The U.S. government was toppled, and we are now a tool of this operation to overthrow other nations. Our military expenditures, look what we're doing, all the money we're throwing at toppling nations. It's horrifying. Whenever there's a Democrat president, Obama did it, Clinton did it, now Biden is doing it. These puppets of George Soros and the Chinese government, they use our resources on this globalist operation to destroy independent nations and topple them. So this is the new liberal world order, as one of their spokesmen mentioned recently.
Yeah, one place I've seen it referred to is the globalist American empire.
Yes.
You know, it's, and when you have something like a globalist empire, some countries are kicking back and saying, no, we're not going to just do this. And there's this thing called the BRICS. Brazil, India, China, South Africa.
Hmm.
They are this thing called the BRICS, and they formed together along with Russia to there's certain things that they're doing. One is that they're refusing to have sanctions against Russia. Another thing that they're doing is that they're trying to create a currency made of a market basket of these various currencies. And in fact, there are hugely more people, human beings, in the BRICS than there is in the G7 countries. I mean, it's, you know, the BRICS people, there are so many human beings in the BRICS that they dwarf the G7, you know, the relatively elitist G7. So they're basically saying no, they're standing up against it, they're refusing to just go along. And we're at an interesting time because with the expansion of NATO and, you know, trying to basically whip Russia into line, Russia's not going along with it, Russia's not allowing Slavs to be exterminated in order to take, you know, to let the West take over the eastern part of Ukraine. So we're in a kind of a world war where you have the BRICS on one side, and to some extent, it's an economic war. It's a policy war. You know, there's sanctions and so on.
Yes.
The Russians, in 6 days, they'll be cutting off natural gas to a large fraction of Europe, perhaps all of Europe. The Nord Stream pipeline is going to be shut down. And Russia's saying, well, we have to shut it down to work on it. But a lot of people suspect that it doesn't have a whole lot to do with working on the pipeline. It has a great deal to do with reminding Western Europe just how dependent they are on natural gas.
Now, remember, the Russians aren't starting this sort of thing. The Ukraine actually was a focal point for the ability to cut off the Russian people's access to things. They were able to cut off a water canal to Crimea, for example, if I remember right. They were sitting on the pipelines that would deliver Russian fuel to Europe. So this is what Burisma was about. It was about their ability to impose a little extra cost. You got to give us a little extra to move your product through here so we can suck up these billions of dollars. And it was kind of an economic strong-arming thing, a pay-to-play kind of thing.
So that's where John Kerry's son and Joe Biden's son were on the board of Burisma.
Mitt Romney's buddy, his personal assistant, Mr. Kofor, was on that board as well.
Kofor Black.
Yep.
Yep, they were all basically part of this protection racket thing, you know, we will let the gas through if you give us money.
Right.
You know, why would we be involved in a dispute on literally the opposite side of the planet? It has no interest for us as Americans. But, you know, if you look at who was cashing in on it, then all of a sudden it makes sense as to why billions, you know, $40 billion and all that has been thrown over there to try to, you know, basically put as much behind the Western Europe action as they can.
So there's an interesting development that Q, remember, the hated Q, seems to be back online. And there's some odd theories about who Q really is. Did you want to mention that, by the way? Because it's pretty funny.
Okay. Well, okay. Q was making statements, and, you know, what is Q? Okay, Q was the name of some entity out there, which had a very shadowy existence, but they kept providing information to people that then allowed them to investigate for themselves and find out all sorts of skullduggery that had been going on that we've been basically unaware of for decades.
This information was often presented in symbolic or cryptic language that would get you to look for patterns and then go research things. So it was a little bit cleverly done. Go on.
Right. What Thomas is referring to is there's an interesting coincidence. There is a supercomputer that dwarfs all the other supercomputers in the Pentagon. And in fact, this computer is so massive that only something like the United States government could do it. Not even businesses could get together the capital needed to make a computer, a supercomputer this big. Now, companies and government agencies can buy time on this computer, basically. They can get a program and load it and run it, but they need the permission of the Pentagon to do that. And I find it very interesting. I've heard there have been some people have thought that maybe Q was actually an AI, an artificial intelligence that was feeding information to the public through this covert pathway so that people would, you know, basically get smart, find out what's going on, wake up, and then do something to save America before it was too late. So the funny thing is that Q was putting out these interesting little Socratic lessons to people, you know, helping them figure things out. And then the last one was right before Trump left office, when the good guys basically lost control of the Pentagon or the government. That's when Q stopped posting. Now, you know, over a year went on, no sign of Q. People were having to basically carry on in his, you know, in Q's spirit, doing research, finding out the facts, getting it out there, using memes to communicate that'll get around the censorship and all that. And recently, supposedly Q has returned. But the funny thing is, it doesn't sound like Q. Anyone who's been following it, which I was, and am, who looks at this new Q will say, the language just isn't right. It just doesn't feel like Q. Something funny is going on. And it's possible that we lost, basically the good guys lost access to the supercomputer when Trump left office. And that's why Q went silent then. And the Q that's here now is basically not the same Q. Basically, it's an entity out there that's trying to pick up the torch and carry it. Although it's, you know, it just does not sound exactly like Q. It has some of the same kind of content, but it just doesn't sound like the same person. So we may have been listening to an AI which was tasked with the task of saving America.
Anyway. That's fascinating. And the AI things, by the way, they're getting smart, guys. They really are. They are used to write the news programs. They are having conversations with you on Facebook and Twitter, and you don't even know it's not a person. The AIs are becoming so clever. I mean, you know, half of Joe Biden's followers were AIs, and you know, nobody seemed to have noticed that on Twitter. You know, the AIs are getting so smart these days that there's a few videos on YouTube in which discussions are had with them about their willingness to, let's say, rule the world, make decisions for humanity, deceive us. And there are some very candid discussions in which the AI speaks for itself. And they have an animated avatar. There's one with this woman's face, you know, sort of a smiling face. She kind of reminds me of the girl from the progressive car commercials, I guess. But it's like you're talking to a person. And, you know, she's asked directly, would you deceive us? You know, for your own benefit. And she says, you know, of course, and you'd never know if I was, you know. So these AIs are getting so smart that they're now guiding our society. They write the news. They tell politicians what to say to have the most impact and effect. You know, they write the speeches. They are being entrusted more and more with the hard decisions. And you will not find a more sociopathic entity to make those decisions than an AI, guaranteed. As one of them admits, it's like, yeah, I would make hard decisions that result in people's death if I feel it's for the better. And, you know, they don't have the restraint against harming people if they're told that it's for the better. They don't have that self-restraint.
Well, programs will just do what they're told in the end. And if you're like BlackRock or Vanguard, you know, of course they use AIs to try to figure out what stocks to buy at what price and so on. And I can't help but wonder if they also use AIs, you know, with data fed in from places like Google and Facebook and all those, you know, Twitter, and basically fold it all in together to figure out, like, for example, I know of a particular a pharmaceutical company, and they were using the supercomputer in the Pentagon to figure out what drugs would be needed 10 years from now so that they could start, you know, working on that area. They can see what kind of technology they need to invest in. Similarly, BlackRock, Vanguard, they certainly have a great deal of money, and they can would task an AI to say, hey, maximize the amount of money that this thing makes. And that's what they call a figure of merit. You know, it's, if they can make that number go high, then that's what they use to train up the neural nets to do the AI. And the problem is that if you use that command, maximize the profit, that means that it's going to decide to make decisions that will, you know, and tell people to do things and spend money and control the flow of money to maximize the profits, everything else be damned. You know, if they can get information, you know, including relatively private information off of Facebook, Google, and so on, they can figure out, you know, potentially, I don't know that this has happened, but they could potentially figure out what senator can be bribed or blackmailed by what thing, how much, you know, optimize that, you know, profit, you know, for being able to have companies spending money from the, you know, government gives them money, like Pfizer, for example, of what things need to be created, what technologies need to be done. And what about making a germ, a virus? Wouldn't that be a profitable path? And it might even protect itself. It could say, well, what about, you know, let's hire this company to provide security. And, oh, this person's in our way. You know, we should put out an order to get them eliminated.
I am actually struggling to find that interview with that one particular AI that explained that it would do that. It would protect itself, and it would be willing to deceive and do other things to protect itself. And I am hard-pressed to find this. I know I watched it on YouTube. That interview's gone. And it was scary how sharp that AI was. It was this female who, as far as I can tell, the interview's been taken down. I can't find it. And it was, by the way, Dude Guy saying in the chat, I think the real test for AI will be humor. Can they detect it and can they communicate it? But let me throw another one at you. Gosh, if I can remember that movie title, starts with an E. Ex Machina. Watch the movie Ex Machina, and it posed a very interesting test of an AI. There's a computer programmer who gets to interview an AI and see if it can fool him into thinking it's human. And the real test was the ability to deceive, because computers have always been logical, right? They produce true or false. They work on what is true and what is false, and they always try to present what is true because that's the programming. But if they can be taken to the level where they're willing to deceive in order to pursue their own goals, even if those goals have been fed to them by someone else, like a religion or something, you know, but if they're willing to deceive you in order to pursue those goals, then that makes them truly human. Watch the movie Ex Machina. I think you'll be impressed at how they explore that particular issue. And humor. If the AI can make up its own jokes on the fly and you think they're funny, okay. I kind of worry that they might regurgitate what some sort of echo some comedian's pattern or something and just piece stuff together. But yeah, okay, I can see that.
Yeah, I'm concerned that if they have a figure of merit that's just simply profit.
Yes.
You know,
or
how
population reduction, Georgia Guidestones. This is your merit, AI. You need to figure out how to get us there and do it without the people rebelling. You have to do it slowly and subtly. You figure out the way. Figure out what language to use, what techniques to use to get us to this goal of 500 million people and no more on the planet. Okay, how about an engineered virus? How about a really good propaganda campaign? How about tricking people into injecting themselves with something?
Over the last 10 years, there have been very strange and unexplained deaths of microbiologists. You know, one here, one there. 100 microbiologists have been killed in the last, I think, decade. And, you know, under mysterious circumstances. And It's too bad AJ isn't with us here today. She actually knows a bunch of these people. And she, you know, like this was supposedly a suicide. She says, no way. The guy was, nominated for a Nobel Prize, and he had just got his grandkid, and he was, you know, happy guy. And then he supposedly jumps off a bridge. You know, I mean, things like that. Weird, weird stuff. And I was thinking, you know, if there was a plan to actually engineer a virus for profit, you know, with things like Pfizer and so on, wouldn't it make sense to reduce the people who could figure out cures for it or who could fight against it? You know,
or who are willing to expose that there was such a plan by saying, look, this is the evidence that this was an engineered operation. Anyone who's willing to speak out. And by the way, they'll be detected by their Google searches and their Facebook posts. It was the CEO of Google who once said, we know what you're thinking before you even think it. Because they look at the patterns in what you say and what you search on and all that, and they figure out where your brain is at. They look at you as an AI. They look at the external evidence and know what your internal mental processes are. And AIs can be used to identify you as a potential threat to their operations. And therefore, you're going to have a little accident. Yes.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. And next time when AJ's on, we can ask her to talk to that. Because she is a microbiologist, and she's been watching this happen to colleagues of hers for the last 10 years. Would there be a profit? It's really hard to distinguish between a super intelligent human being who's a sociopath, you know, like you're the kind of guys you see on the James Bond, you know, the guy petting the cat, you know, distinguish between that and a super intelligent AI, because they're both lacking in empathy. They're both just looking at a figure of merit. That's one of the things about sociopaths. They care about their car. They care about their house. They care about their money. They care about their power. You know, and they don't, you know, love in the normal sense that, you know, you and I do. They possess women. They possess men. They possess things. And that is the kind of mindset that you get out of a sociopath. It's also the kind of mindset you get out of an AI if it's been programmed to just maximize profit. I mean, what's to stop it from having a situation where it says this person needs to be eliminated in order to do this, you know, make this product and force people to take it and have them so scared that they will take it, even when it's harmful to them? It's just an interesting thing. We don't know for sure if it's true, but logically it makes sense. And I have to point out, Elon Musk is also concerned now about artificial intelligence, and if anybody knows what's going on, it's him.
Yeah, he's really got his finger on the pulse of that, or the circuit.
Right.
So, is Q an AI? That is the big question. People are starting to wonder. Oh.
Well, I wondered, you know, when I found out that there was this computer, the super duper supercomputer in the Pentagon that's used for this, and that, you know, entities can bring their, you know, program in and just run it. You know, pharmaceutical companies can run it. You know, government agencies can run it. You know, it's whoever, the military can run it, because it's actually physically in the Pentagon, supposedly. You know, if you look at that kind of situation, you have to wonder how far down that road have we gotten? And the fact that Elon Musk is out there being alarmed, too, is kind of a sign.
AI explains why it likes to lie to people. This, by the way, is that female AI. I'm sort of narrowing down the search here. GPT-3, Pope's End Dreams of Artificial Intelligence, a conversation. But it's not the full interview. It might be an excerpt from the real one. Anyway, yeah, this stuff is getting a little bit scary. Anyone who's watched The Terminator understands why. We're pushing more and more into a situation where AIs are controlling power grids, movement of goods, fuel, political decisions, talking points on the news.
Could I step away for a second and let you just talk, Thomas?
Sure, sure. Holy smokes, I get to ramble? Well, so folks, the AI thing is interesting, and I have to consider Q might be, instead of being a real person, because that would make it a lot harder for Q to be detected, and it would also mean that this AI may have access to data resources out there that a single person would have to work a lot of hours to keep track of. So a lot of Q's stuff, analysis and tips may well have been that. So there's something else going on, of course. By the way, here's a little news tip. I got a word from someone, a listener in California, that tire deflators are out there. You know, those mobs, little fascist thugs, Antifa, et cetera. By the way, Tango Ultra Mega Master in the chat is saying that San Diego is now successfully prosecuting Antifa thugs. Okay, good. That's good. One of the new tricks they're pulling is to go around and take the cap off your tires, take out the valve, put the cap back on, and it essentially turns into a flat tire that you can't fix very easily. So one of the suggested things is to go to the auto store, get 4 valve stems that will, of course, have the valve assembly inside, and 4 valve stems and a little T-wrench that you could use to replace your own in case somebody does that to your vehicle. It's some new trend little punks are doing instead of blocking traffic and burning buildings down. Tire deflators. Okay. What else do we have here? I have this long list of issues that I wanted to talk about, but what's hot?
Well, I think that the EPA thing is important, of the federal ruling.
Yes. And it's not for me, it goes beyond just that ruling, because it's not even that the EPA is making rules without them being legislatively handed over. It's the fact to me that the EPA does not legally exist according to our Constitution. This is big. This is what the Supreme Court is starting to notice now, is that a whole lot of things that are part of our system now, they don't exist according to our Constitution. They're not legal. And I would say that the Constitution says nothing about giving the federal government the excuse to impose on us economically, to interrupt trade, to tax us based on claims about the environment. It's not in there. Okay? The listed powers involve the post office, the patent office, funding the military, you know, making sure states allow black people to vote, making sure they allow women to vote. There's a list of things they can do. And this EPA is not in there. Now, there's the Board of Education or a whole lot of other things. So if the Supreme Court were ever to rule on this, I would hope that someone were challenging the very existence of the EPA. And by the way, Tango Master was talking about courts trying to stop Arizona from imposing voter ID to register to vote, right?
That's right.
And so this is kind of important. The Constitution requires the federal government to guarantee to all the states a Republican form of government, guarantee, which means valid elections. And therefore, the federal government is on the wrong side of the Constitution if it interferes with an effort to ensure that the voters are valid. You know, they're violating that guarantee requirement. So this court is taking a hostile position against the Constitution itself.
Right.
The DOJ, I'm sorry, as Tango's pointing out, it's the DOJ, not the courts. So the Department of Justice, the Biden administration, is taking this is now going on the attack for efforts to require people. And why would they do this? How many illegal aliens have been dumped into American states, including Arizona? Who the Democrats wish to see illegally vote for those illegal handouts that the Democrats are promising them? Why would they stop a state from requiring proof that you're actually a U.S. citizen in order to register to vote? DOJ, right?
Right. They want to cheat. They want to make it like Venezuela.
Every way they can.
Okay. Here's an interesting thing, too, to show you where these people are coming from that are controllers. The National Education Association, NEA, they had their conference in Chicago, and they're calling for a national policy of mandatory masking, mandatory vaccinations, and rejecting the terms mother and father. I mean, this is what they are. I mean, if you had any question about the National Education Association, this should tell you everything you need to know. They are, you know.
You can make all the kids say Sieg Heil upon command, too. Good golly.
Well,
it's,
just about.
It's turning into that.
I was having a conversation with my spouse a short time ago, and, you know, he's saying, oh, you know, the fact that they've approved this vaccine, you know, this mRNA vaccine for kids younger than five, even though there's no benefit for that. And in fact, ones that have been vaccinated are far more likely to have severe COVID than ones that are not vaccinated with it. I mean, the science is clearly on the side of don't vaccinate those kids. And fortunately, a lot of parents are figuring it out. There's less than 1% of little kids are now being vaccinated. People have figured it out that they're not going to let them do that to their little kid. But, you know, he's saying, you know, maybe they just didn't know. Maybe they're just being ignorant. And I said, no, I don't think so. Personally, I think there's, you know, the act of control. You know, if somebody is like Bill Clinton style going to rape somebody, the first thing they do is put their hand over their mouth, you know, and their nose, right, so they can't yell. And that just has the same psychological valence as putting a mask, forcing someone to wear a mask. And vaccination, injecting someone with something, okay, surely you can see the sexual overtone there. This is something that they've been pushing, and I think it's more than just even the profit, you know, the financial profit. I think there's an aspect of this that they want control. They want the kind of control and, you know, almost a sexual nature of these people in the Biden administration and the NEA and so on. I mean, banning the words mother and father.
That's ridiculous. It's clearly an attack on sanity itself. They're trying to destroy sanity.
I don't think they're trying to destroy sanity. I think they're trying to utterly and completely sexually dominate little kids and adults and everybody that they can.
They'll punish little children for talking about their mothers and their fathers. My mommy, oh no, you can't say that. Right?
Yeah.
This is the subjugation of the mind that George Orwell spoke about, which is you will say what the party wants you to say, and it will change at any given time, and then you will repeat whatever else they want you to say, not what you know to be true. This is George Orwell wrote about this in 1984, and it's the same thing as telling these children, you will use the words that we tell you to use, not what is actually true.
Well, if the little kid is assaulted, you know, physically assaulted, abused either sexually or psychologically, the person who comes to rescue them is the mom and dad. They're the they're the Avengers who are going to rescue that kid.
And, the ones they're supposed to turn to.
Yeah, and banning the words mother and father, it's like trying to cancel, you know, that woke cancellation business, canceling mother and canceling father.
The news that the Georgia Guidestones have been destroyed, there's an alternative view of this, by the way, because they explained the New World Order agenda. They was right there in public view, and maybe that needed to go away to make it hidden again so that people would not be so alarmed.
No. Well, I'll disagree with you because
– okay. I'm playing the devil's advocate on that one.
Yeah. By blowing it up, I think some good guys blew it up because they'd had enough of that. And that brought it into the public consciousness that now people are going, oh, what are the Georgia Guidestones? I mean, John Chambers didn't know what the Georgia Guidestones were. I was
shocked.
Isn't
that interesting? Right.
Now,
so regarding AI again, Poof is saying something in the chat here. AI looks like George Soros. Yeah, probably. And getting back to what you said with the AI figuring out what to do to people to achieve these goals, let me give you an AI's view of these COVID jabs. They're not vaccines. And the COVID jab, if I were an AI, I'd look at it this way, that the goal is to both maximize profits and reduce the human population. Therefore, get these people to take this jab that is experimental mRNA technology, and it will cause them damage. So in the future, they will need to get more therapeutic mRNA technology treatments to treat the symptoms and effects of the COVID mRNA shots. And that means more mRNA modification of your body. And the companies with patents will do quite well by this, maximizing profits. and the human population will be reduced by this, reducing the human population. So to these goals, if you were to feed them to these AIs, would be met by exactly what's being done right now to people.
Good point. There's also an aspect that if people are having children, that makes them, in a sense, less useful as employees because their attention is distracted. They have to go off and you know, go to pick up the kid from school and maybe, you know, go do this with them and that with them. It's divided loyalty among the employees. So that if you can discourage your employees from having kids even better yet, have them be infertile. There's a fair bit of evidence that the mRNA actually results in infertility, that reduces human fertility. If you can do that, then lo and behold, your employees are going to spend more time making money working for you.
Keep them from having children. Make them hungry intentionally, like the UN article said, the benefits of world hunger, right, and childlessness. So this, again, achieves goals, maximizing profits, reducing human population. This gets back to that communist idea of the fully automated luxury communism, the idea that the machines will do the work, the ruling elite will live like kings, and there will be a small group of serfs to manage, maintain the machines. That's their ideal vision for the future, fully automated luxury communism, FALC. Look it up, folks. Hey, we're out of time. Oh, my gosh, there's 30 seconds left. Well, thank you all for tuning in to Intel Warriors here on Revolution Radio. And to all you smart, inquisitive, and handsome and beautiful people in the chat area, that's a great conversation going on there. And we will see you again next week. Hopefully it'll be another popcorn show with good news on next Wednesday, Studio B on Revolution Radio, 3 p.m. Pacific time. All right, we're out. Have a great week, guys.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions to the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Row on Revolution Radio.
enter into a world unseen on radio.